Good afternoon. I'm Katie King of your staff. I'm here today to talk about the implementation of Green Diamond Resource Company's waste discharge requirements. Green Diamond has two WDRs from us adopted in 2010 and in 2012, and together they offer comprehensive ownership-wide coverage. Here is what I'm going to be covering today. And I'm here today because the chairman asked for an update on the Forest Management WDR. I also thought it was an opportunity to discuss the roads WDR. Green Diamond has about 380,000 acres. They are the largest private timberland owner in our region. You can see the areas we're talking about are represented in green here on this map. And here is a list of all of their operations that are covered under the two WDRs. I should mention that I am not going to be talking about the 1,900 acres of Green Diamond's property in Elk River that are covered by these WDRs, but that are subject to a separate and ongoing public TMDL process. Green Diamond operates under an aquatic habitat conservation plan approved by federal agencies and that received a consistency determination from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And we peeled off of the AHCP for our permits, first for the roads WDR and then for the forest management WDR. And the management measures from the AHCP are incorporated into our WDRs by reference. It's a federally approved plan that protects the covered species, which are endangered salmon, trout, and amphibians. And it includes studies of the watersheds in which Green Diamond operates. There's a conservation management plan component, and that includes all the measures that are employed to protect the species, and those management measures go above and beyond what other timberland owners adhere to under the forest practice rules. So there's road management measures that we use in the roads WDR, and then there's other measures such as slope stability measures, harvest-related ground disturbance measures, seasonal restrictions, and other things. All those measures are requirements under our WDRs. It's a good program. There's higher standards than the forest practice rules. It's site-specific and it's company-specific. And there's feedback and adaptive management through the monitoring program that are also incorporated into our requirements through the monitoring and reporting program. With coverage under the roads WDR, Green Diamond is able to carry out the road management plan from their AHCP. And that has two main parts to it. The first is the implementation plan, and that's the grand plan for upgrading and decommissioning the road systems across the whole property. And it happens in a systematic progression across the property. There's also the maintenance plan, and that is designed to keep upgraded roads in good condition, but also treats chronic sources that just can't wait and sites that are at imminent risk of failure, because we can't just wait for those to be fixed as the plan progresses across the property. THP-related road work, timber harvest plan-related road work, is also covered under the roads WDR. A forward-thinking aspect about this program is that all of the roads are evaluated on a 1 or 3 year basis. So most other landowners only evaluate roads as part of timber harvest plans. So instead of just plugging the gaps under this program, Green Diamond systematically manages a road system across 380,000 acres, keeping roads up, bringing roads up to modern standards and then keeping them that way. Here is a photo of the types of sites that are treated under the roads WDR. This one, you can see an old railroad trestle from the old railroad trestle bridge, and then the dawn of the age of trucking came along, and they, back in the day, placed logs in the stream and then pushed dirt over it and created a Humboldt crossing. You can still see those old fills in here. And then it eroded away in large part, and later on still, somebody placed a bridge across the top. And that's all being replaced and repaired and brought up to modern standards now. Here's a picture of a culvert being replaced in action from 2011. And this work can be very messy while it's happening. But when it's all done, we have a modern road system. Here you have a culvert that is appropriately sized for the flows of this water course. It's armored around the inlet to prevent erosion. They've taken large wood out of the old crossing and used it for erosion control. And you can also see that there's a critical dip built in, so it's a fail-safe measure if this crossing ever does fail, that the stream will stay where it belongs instead of running down the road. It's also worth pointing out that this crossing isn't quite done yet because none of the erosion control seed and straw has been placed on it, but you get to really see how it's done. Here's a picture of an upgraded road. It has a stable all-weather surface. It's sloped for drainage, and vegetation along the road is trimmed to keep the road dry. So this is what we're aiming for. Here we have some numbers to reflect on progress since adoption of the roads WDR. In 2010, you can see we were just getting started. There's not very many sites, but there's more and more sites as the years progress. The number that I would like to bring your attention to is this one over here. This is the potential sediment that could be delivered that was removed from crossings not associated with THPs. Like I said, other landowners only treat roads associated with THPs, so this permit allowed these sites and this sediment to be removed. And 107,507 cubic yards is over 150 DCJ rooms. That's a lot of dirt. And the roads WDR was essential to achieving that. Now I will turn to the forest management WDR. As mentioned, our WDRs are an outgrowth of the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan, whose measures are more protective for water quality than the forest practice rules that others operate under. Forest management conservation measures include harvest-related ground disturbance measures, slope stability measures, riparian protections, and then there's a monitoring program that provides feedback and adaptive management, and all of these measures are incorporated into our WDRs and the MRP. Here's an example of harvest-related ground disturbance measures. This is a shovel yarder, and you can see that the logs don't touch the ground, so there's minimal ground disturbance. Here's another picture of a shovel yarder, and one of the features of this equipment is that it rolls right over the top of slash, so there's minimal ground disturbance. And this is used on flatter slopes under 35%. On steeper slopes, cable yarding is utilized. Here there's a cable yarder, and there's a shovel that is now being used to load the logs. And as you can see, the bare ground for this type of operation is limited to the road area, and the road is on a ridgetop well away from water. Here's an example of slope stability protections. This is a deep-seated landslide with the buffer zone afforded to it in the middle of a clear-cut unit. And here are riparian zone protections that you can see. Here's where the streams are, and these are the riparian buffers in the middle of a clear-cut unit. Many of the management measures, including the riparian protections, are stricter, more protective than the forest practice rules. In addition to incorporating management measures from the AHCP, the way the WDR works is that we evaluate plans as part of the CAL FIRE review team process at the office level and then in the field as needed. And then enrollment is automatic, concurrent with CAL FIRE approval. Although there are procedural safeguards in place to send a plan back for modification if it isn't in compliance with water quality requirements. We have ongoing involvement at the plan level through notifications of startups and completions. The forest management WDR was adopted at the end of 2012, so there's not too many plans for 2012, but by 2013, all of Green Diamond's plans were being enrolled under the forest management WDR. Old plans, there's still 92 of them out there. They date back to 2007, but they're mostly from 2010, 2011, and 2012, and they're phasing out. And so as you can see, we review a lot of plans from Green Diamond, and this program is saving us enormous amounts of time through automatic enrollments, whereas before we used to spend hours on each plan doing the enrollment paperwork. Now it's just minutes per plan. But we don't have less involvement on the real things that are required for reviewing plans. It's just an administrative aspect that's really saving us so much time. That saved time is used to look at a bigger picture of things on Green Diamond's property, including evaluating new information like monitoring. The monitoring program is derived from the AHCP and is a requirement of our MRP, our monitoring and reporting plan, and it helps us get a grasp on the larger scale impacts and watershed health. Implementation is what Green Diamond does to make sure they're complying with management measures, the implementation monitoring. And we get feedback on that type of monitoring through post-harvest report forms and on a plan-by-plan basis. Rapid response monitoring, such as water temperature monitoring or turbidity monitoring, as you see here, or headwater monitoring for tailed frogs and torrent salamanders, which are sensitive to timber harvest. That's a type of monitoring where we get feedback at a quicker rate, quicker scale feedback. Then there's response monitoring, which takes a little bit more time to get feedback, and that's in-channel monitoring, such as stream profiles and substrate measurements and class 3 sediment monitoring. Long-term trend monitoring is through mass wasting assessments, slope delineations, and salmon population studies. Here they're doing electrofishing, and here's some out-migrant trapping. And then experimental monitoring happens in select watersheds, and that involves big or complex monitoring efforts and before and after studies. There's a lot of data being collected, and as part of our requirements, Green Diamond reports to us on their results. The biennial report details results from monitoring efforts and AHCP compliance every 2 years, and it's the same report that all of the agencies get. As the data from all of this monitoring is analyzed, this is where we're going to see an assessment of the results. There's also various annual summary reports that give us information about the status of timber harvesting plans. In conclusion, the two WDRs offer comprehensive coverage of all of Green Diamond's activities on their property. The WDRs incorporate the enhanced conservation measures of the AHCP. There's big sediment savings accomplished through the roads WDR. It's accelerated, it's systematic, and there's streamlined administration under both of the permits. Sorry. This allows for a bigger picture perspective with a big landowner. And then as the monitoring rolls in, we expect to measure watershed improvements from sediment savings and from management measures that are implemented as part of the AHCP and covered by the WDRs. Gary Rainerson and Matt House are here from Green Diamond to discuss how these permits have been working for them and the efficiencies they've been seeing. But first, I'll take your questions.
Do board members have any questions? Greg?
Katie, thank you for a very thoughtful and thorough presentation. I guess what I was struck with, I'm pleased to know that staff is working that closely with such a large landowner and has developed a sense of trust. Obviously, the kind of pictures and the kind of access that you have here is a testament to your work and to Green Diamond's willingness, and they've always been transparent in a lot of their information, but I think this is a model of how staff should work with landowners to build trust and exchange information and move the dialogue and the discussion forward in a positive method. So good job. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks.
Any other board member comments?
Mr. Chairman, board members, Gary Reinerson, Green Diamond Resource Company. There was actually three WDRs. There was an Elk River WDR that predated the roads WDR, and just back to your comment. That's really where our staff and your staff started to work together and develop a relationship that, and keep in mind that was right in the middle of some pretty tumultuous times with another adjacent landowner that you worked with quite a bit, and so being able to develop that trust from folks like Matt and Katie working together and others on a professional level, sharing information, sharing data, that's really what led to this process. And again, that the first was that watershed wide WDR in Elk River that then led to the roads WDR after we'd implemented our aquatic HCP in 2008. we really needed to have the roads WDR to properly implement our aquatic plan. Without it, we were only able to work within the boundaries of a THP and the pertinent roads associated with that THP, and what the roads WDR then allowed us to do would be to go outside the realm of the THP, and that we have a sediment plan that's front-loaded. 50% of all identified sediment potential sites are treated in the first 15 years of our aquatic HCP, and by putting that roads WDR in place, it really made a difference as far as being able to move forward. So I'd really like to thank the farsighted perspective that Bob Clampt had at the time, because we worked very closely with him for the development of the roads WDR, and then of course with your current EO Matt for the development of the forest management WDR, and then Katie and our Matt worked very closely together in the development of that forest WDR. So our approach has been, will continue to be, science-based, and you'll hear a little bit more about that directly from Matt, some of the technical aspects. But we continue to monitor, that drives us, and we have an adaptive management program that is then driven by that monitoring process. You heard Katie talk about our roads. We look at every pertinent road and every mainline road every year. We look at every other road every 3 years. We have an agreement within the first 2 years to look at every single culvert crossing that is across the landscape and identify any of those culverts that have a critical risk of failure. And if they do, they're replaced either that year or as soon as we have seasonal access the following year. So that was a pretty major program. The other thing that the Forest Management WDR did is it codified our HCP. The HCP is an agreement between us and the two federal agencies. This codifies it and really puts it all together in one place and in one package, which is a big deal. And we're obligated to operate not only under your WDR, but once that's incorporated into a timber harvesting plan, that has the effect of regulation. So that really was a big shift in how we do business. And these are long-term plans. Our aquatic plan has, 46 years left on it? It's a 50-year plan. It does allow for site-specific, and again, the Elk River plan is actually built into this aquatic plan, so it's actually part of this system. But there's also we've also had some other changes that have occurred since we received the WDR. That is, we have sold some lands. Some of those lands have gone to the Yurok tribe, that they purchased lands along the Klamath. We also sold some outlying lands that were in the Trinity Klamath system. So what that means is some of those lands were not part of the WDR, and so we're getting very close to having our entire ownership fall under this WDR, because the WDR and the aquatic HCP have the exact same geographic footprint. The other thing we've done is we've become certified under the Forest Stewardship Council. And that occurred in February of last year, so just about a year ago now. And while it doesn't change a lot of aquatic standards, and the FSC standards and the standards we already have in place are very similar. What it did do is required us to go back and start putting more of tree retention across the landscape, mostly within the even age units, where we're now at about 27% retention across the landscape. So over 25% over a quarter of our landscape is either in a unharvested or very lightly harvested position, and we are now leaving. We've got a new what we call a tree retention model in place that saves not only the trees for wildlife purposes, but in some cases for aesthetic purposes, and that's across the landscape. So with that, I'll turn it over to Matt.
Hi, Matt House, Green Diamond Resource Company. Good afternoon. I just wanted to touch on a couple things with our monitoring program that Katie mentioned, just to provide a little bit of information regarding that. We have an extensive monitoring, water temperature monitoring program, which actually has part of that yellow light, red light feedback, where we can basically get information back on basically at the end of the year, look at conditions, see how water temperatures are performing, and that's one example of that feedback mechanism that we have to see how things are doing. One of the programs actually that was developed with the Roads Management WDR, we actually made a lot of sense. We actually incorporated that as part of our HCP. Now that's been adopted by NIMS with our HCP. And basically what that does is looks at, as we're treating all these road sites, it has an implementation element of it. So right after we're done treating a site, we want to make sure that we go out and look at it, make sure it's actually working or it was actually implemented as designed, all the mitigation measures were in place. And then we basically let it go through a winter and then go back immediately following and have that effectiveness essentially element to it as well. So that's an immediate feedback. Another example of a monitoring program with that quick response to see how things are performing. A lot of this is tied back into adaptive management as well. One example, some of the landslide mitigation measures. Katie showed one example with the deep-seated landslides. We also have steep streamside slope protections, and there's default prescriptions that were developed as part of that conservation plan, and one of the monitoring components of that was to actually collect more information to try to determine what if in fact those defaults were adequate. So there's a process laid out to go out and collect a lot more information and then redefine what those default prescriptions are, and we're basically coming to the end of that time period to be completed. So hopefully by the end of this year we'll have the new default prescriptions for the riparian or for our steep streamside slope geologic prescriptions in place. Some of the other long-term habitat projects that we have, we're going to be starting in 2015. We'll be reinitiating our habitat typing assessment project, which is basically an adopted protocol that Fish and Wildlife has used to identify areas to do restoration work. Well, we've been doing this starting back in 1990, and on a decade pattern has started reassessing some of these sites. So we're coming up on our third. So as you can see, you get 3 points, you can start defining the line. So that's again, being able to look at over time how the habitat conditions are changing. I know there's a lot of information on monitoring. Happy to answer any questions regarding that. There has been a lot of turnover within or jostling of staff within water quality, and we're going to be having a meeting pretty soon. I was talking to Fred earlier to try to kind of reacquaint everybody on some of the different monitoring programs that we have, the status of where those things are going. We had submitted our biennial report, as Katie mentioned. The last one was due March 15th of 2013, so that was submitted under this forest management WDR to water quality. So look forward to future conversations to go over that monitoring program and give an update on where we are with that. I also wanted to talk about some of the benefits that we've observed here recently with the two WDRs in the context of actually acquiring the permit and a lot of the paperwork processes associated with it. We have an annual work plan that we submit to water quality on March 1st of each year. And this covers everything that we plan to do during this following summer as of that date. And then under the general WDR, we basically had to accumulate all that information and submit it individually for every THP. And those were submitted throughout the year, and they could range anywhere between 30 and 60 of those on an annual basis, depending on how many plans we were submitting. So now it's kind of as one package. It's submitted March 1st, and the department has, or water quality has, basically 2 months to review that information, conduct field investigations. I think, it streamlines the process for the amount of paperwork. There's also a very straightforward process to amend that annual work plan. So as new plans are developed, we basically batch information together and resubmit that. We have about 6 to 12 of those that we submit annually. So again, in terms of the context of the number you used to see, it's kind of batched together. And it's typically associated with recently approved THPs for any road work that needs to be done as part of the imminent risk of failure assessment and treatment process that Katie mentioned. We also have to only produce one document for two agencies. So this roads WDR is tied, or it's parallel with the programmatic 1600 permit, or the master agreement for timber operations that we have with California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And so we just have to produce one document. It basically covers both of those permits. Let's see, and this also goes for the annual work report, which basically summarizes all the work that we did the previous year and the monitoring associated with those sites. Again, one document submitted to both agencies. So, again, that was not just a testament of your staff working with Green Diamond to develop that permit, but that actually involved multi-agencies in terms of the collaboration involved to come up with a system that met the permit requirements, the monitoring and reporting elements of both agencies. So that was really neat to be a part of that and see that happen. It streamlines our THP document as well. There used to have to be an erosion control plan within every single THP, and that basically reiterated a lot of the same information that was already part of the timber harvest plan in the enforceable section. So that's been now all basically done through cross-references with these existing documents that are on file with CAL FIRE, are available on websites so the public can see the content of those information and relate it back to the plan that's being submitted and evaluated. So our, I don't know how thick our THPs are, like 300 some odd documents, it streamlines some of that paperwork associated with it. Another big one in terms of efficiency is we've seen shortened the amount of time in which we get all the necessary permits to actually begin our timber operations. As I know you're well aware, it takes a lot of information and a lot of time and effort to actually put one of these timber harvest plans together, even just to submit it. It's typically about a 3-month process. And then you add on top of that, it was about a 3.6-month average time to get the THP through the review process with CAL FIRE and the multi-agency review. Under the former GWDR, you added on top of that another 25 days on average once the permit was approved by CAL FIRE. So now it's basically, as Katie mentioned, it's basically enrolled as soon as the THP is approved by CAL FIRE after going through all the multi-agency review process. So water quality is still involved with that review process, but once CAL FIRE approves it, then it's basically enrolled. So that was basically a 20% savings in terms of the review process for each THP. So that's a tremendous amount of operational certainty and flexibility that we've seen as a result of this permit. As also was mentioned by Gary and Katie, this really allowed us to fully implement the road management plan under our HCP. At the time that the HCP was approved, there was basically an element that we weren't able to implement because it was relying on permits that we didn't have issued outside the timber harvest plan. So everything was done on a THP by THP approach before, so we could only fix sites that were associated with THPs. So with the development approval of this road management WDR in conjunction with the MADO from California Department of Fish and Wildlife, we've been able to fully implement that road management plan under the HCP, which we believe is really a pretty innovative way to manage our road network and on a landscape basis. So I just wanted to thank the board for developing these permits and issuing them to Green Diamond. I briefly described how they've streamlined our process and how they've really dovetailed really well into our existing management landscape programs wherever possible. And this includes our HCP, our other management programs, our monitoring programs, our reporting programs. So I just really appreciate the vision you and your staff have had to basically make that happen and allow us to help us manage on a landscape basis. I think that makes a lot of sense to try to do. So thanks.
Thanks, Matt. That pretty well concludes everything that we had to say, and be happy to take any questions. The one thing I'd like to add is that the last piece of this that isn't where we don't manage on a landscape basis is the timber harvesting plan process. And we are looking at potentially for a PTIR, which would allow basically the final piece to have all of these documents then to be able to be implemented through that process also. And it's essentially an EIR, but then the plans are submitted through what's called a PTHP, which is pretty much the same as regular THP, but just slightly different as it relies more off of that master EIR document. So,
Questions from the board member? Maybe I'll start with board member Hale.
Thanks. Thanks, guys. We appreciate the update. It's good to see this having got off the ground for where it's at now, because the last time we saw it, well, the last couple of times we've seen was right when it was sort of fledgling and getting off the ground. And the framework was outlined. It sounded like it was good in concept, but to have you come back and give favorable reviews about it. We thought it was going to be a good idea going in, but it sounds like, you know, one, for implementation on the ground, the area that you're getting to cover and being able to inventory outside of a THP by THP basis, and the efficiencies that it's giving you through the permitting process and our agency as well. And, you know, kind of hopeful. I think there's others that are probably looking at it as a model and seeing how that could go forward. So that's quite encouraging. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Jay.
Mr. Chair, yes, I want to thank you, too. Last time we I remember adopting this, and I asked actually you, Matt, about how you prioritize this. At 380,000 acres, I got to imagine you got a 500,000 miles of roads, something like that. I'm just guessing and winging it, you know. But, I mean, that's a tremendous undertaking. What I heard you say, Gary, was your prioritization on a 1 to 3 year basis out there looking at all this stuff and trying to take care of it. And that is a big mountain to climb. The one question I would have is, Matt, you mentioned, you know, this trend monitoring, and, you know, I'm kind of a data geek, and, you know, when I hear about lots of data, and especially good quality data, you mentioned maybe defining that line, and as far as that goes, trend monitoring, would you even be so kind as to speculate, you know, how long or, you know, when does a trend develop? When do you think you're able to say, yeah, this is going in the right direction, you know? How many data points makes a trend, and you know, how do you use that then? Because you've got so many feedback loops on what you're doing now on your operational side, that to have the complement of data then of water quality data and assessment and effectiveness monitoring to build on to that is tremendous.
Yeah, that's a very good question, and it
and I won't hold you to it, by the way.
Very complex question.
It really
depends on the variable you're after.
Sure.
I remember, must have been, I don't know, 15 years ago or so, someone talked about fish population monitoring, and they said in order to really get a really good trend of that, you need like 100 and some odd years. And so that's very discouraging, right, that with that kind of information. But certainly with it depends on the type of variability you're seeing in the data. So it's hard to say that you need, you know, 3 points to be able to see what a line is, or, you know, with coho, you know, they have a 3-year life cycle, so you need 9 years just to get 3 data points for each cohort. So, you know, it does take a lot of time, and it depends on the variability associated with each metric that you're measuring.
Yeah, and again, I'm not going to hold you to it. The one thing too is that, you know, the descriptors I hear is the gains in efficiency, the regulation or the regulatory and operational surety of what you're doing, the integration of, you know, a company-wide, both vertically and horizontally about what you're doing. Compliments to our staff, by the way, Katie and Bob Clamp, to have the vision, and other staff, too, I know that work on this. I think this is just a really good program and a way to go forward, especially when we have a landowner that's engaged and on really the front end of this, and I just want to thank you. The very last thing I'll ask for is, you mentioned the annual report, that you have an annual report that comes in every year. That's not something that typically, and I may be wrong about that, but I mean, am I right about that? Your reporting comes in as far as your what you've done and your monitoring of that?
Yeah, there's, I guess, I don't know if you want me to answer that. Yeah, there's multiple tiers.
Okay.
There is annual monitoring, and there's biennial monitoring on various different projects. So there's the annual work plan or annual work report that's specifically related to roads. The biennial report is associated initially with our aquatic habitat conservation plan, which now this is, as Gary mentioned, is kind of a part of that. So we provide copies of that information, which summarizes all the activities and summary of monitoring associated with that HCP. There's annual reporting on timber harvest plans associated with the forest management WDR. So there's
a ton of stuff.
There's a lot of information. That's
yeah. The only thing that I was going to ask, because I you know, it's very easy to look up some of the aspect of water quality reporting, say online, like a GeoTracker database or that kind of thing. Timber harvest, I'm not so familiar with. But the only thing that I would ask is just for my own personal education and continue to learn on this curve is that maybe as some of these reports come in, that we hear back on it, or that you notify board members that, hey, this is a really interesting report that shows us what's going on here. And that's just my request. If we can
if you see a report that comes across, Katie, and you think this really shows what's going on here and how this program's working, sure, I'd be interested to take a look at it just for my own self. Anything in the future that you think might pop up. But again, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Mr. Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would reiterate, I think, what everybody else said, that this is delightful. I've been here for other events that were not nearly as pleasant. But I think it speaks to something that this agency, I hope, can learn from, and I will thank Mr. Klemp for that. We have gone through in the 20th century the disbelief that regulation would be possible in an industry such as timber. It's finally accepted, and now we are working together. That gets you efficiencies that are just magnified. You can do roads without having to worry about, is there an obligation, a liability, a blah, blah, blah. No, we're just going to fix the road. And what it does is, I hope, takes this model and puts it into other areas that we do as a water board, because we still have areas where we are in contention constantly, and it's just a constant battle. This absolutely shows it doesn't have to be a constant battle. It can be a collaborative, cooperative effort to get things done, and what it does is it frees up time to look at nitty-gritty stuff. I suspect that one of the things that we will be able to do, you talk about a one-year report of a six-month monitoring, a nine-month monitoring, a 10-month monitoring. Is it some of that stuff eventually I hope we can get rid of so that we can get to what Mr. Norn was just saying, which is let's get one really good report that works just dandy. It may not ever get to one, but we will get the efficiencies out of it that are there. And this is delightful. I'd just like to take this and kind of put it in a couple other areas. So thank you both to our staff and to your staff and to you as individuals for doing this, because this is good stuff.
Mr. Goosey.
Thank you.
Just thank you both for your presentation. You know, when I was watching Katie's slides of your work, remind the board that, you know, when you're in my world or Gary's world, you see big, heavy equipment doing big, heavy things. As Katie said, it may not always look pretty, but the value of having a trained workforce who can move that big equipment and button it up like some of the pictures have shown can't be minimized. To have a trained workforce that can actually go in and move 100 years' worth of dirt and do something good with it is something that has to be recognized, because the best laid plans can be destroyed by a cowboy in a caterpillar. I mean, it can get ugly real fast. And so I, you know, a nod and spending time in the woods with a lot of these LTOs, licensed timber operators, it's really heartening. There's so much pride in the work that they're doing when they think they're fixing something, they're making it better. They're getting behind the kinds of things that were shared with us today, and it really is a very pleasant experience given where timber has come from. So a nod not only to those that write the plan, but to those employees that actually implement the plans and actually make things work in a positive way. So,
well, Greg, you'll be happy to know that there's fewer risk for the cowboys and the caterpillars, because what Katie shows you, the shovel logging, we don't tractor log anymore.
We stopped
tractor logging. We still do bring ground equipment in our thinning operations, because you can't use shovels in the right. thinning operation, but that's a lot smaller equipment. But in the areas that typically 10, 15 years ago we would have tractor logged, now they're shovel logged without any construction of any skid roads at all.
It's a different world out there, Gary. You're absolutely right. And that change has come with a lot of pain and a lot of angst over the years, but it really is different in a positive sense.
Just super briefly, I'll put in my 2 minutes. First, this board should understand we're the ones that put in the possibility of ownership wide many years ago in a very, very controversial timber waiver that went several times up to the state board. And it's really good to see that after all these years, there was a certain wisdom to it. And the goal was trying to deal with innumerable reports on the failure to address cumulative impacts and the challenges both for regulators and industry on individual THPs. And so I think this is takes us to another level at looking at those. It also allowed comprehensive solutions. And then the trade-off was efficiency to the industry and greater levels of certainty than the system was otherwise providing. So I really hope that we get the right balance and we make it work, and I really appreciate your feedback report.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Fred Blatt of your staff. Just wanted to let you know that this was Katie's last adventure with timber harvesting. She's moved on to the 401 water quality certification program, and I just want to thank Katie for all her professionalism and enthusiasm and everything she brought to timber harvest over the last, how many years? 6 years. And we're looking forward to her bringing the same thing to our 401 program. So thank you, Katie.
Yes, thank you. Great job you've done. Okay. Next item is the update.
Is
it, oh, I'm sorry. Do I didn't see a card, but come on up.
There's three of them for him.
Oh, do you know where they? I have Felice for five. Okay. And seven. I apologize, Felice.
No, it's okay.
In fact, as you did have a card.
Other words, too, John.
I get an apology from John today. Wow. Yeah. Felice Pace, representing the Klamath Forest Alliance. I'm going to cherish that one, John. I truly appreciate what this board and the staff and Green Diamond has accomplished. I think it is the best that I've seen in terms of proper regulation, proper operation of timber and roads and so forth, and it is. And the strengths are dealing with the legacy sources, the legacy sediment sources, and the post-wet weather inspection. That's one of the things I've championed over the years because it's the way the old foresters and the Forest Service taught me it was supposed to be done. After the wet season or after a big storm, you go out and you see what has come apart and you fix it. Make plans to fix it. I do think, not looking at the roads that aren't being used in a timber harvest plan for 3 years means you could have some sources out there for 3 years, close to 3 years. And it probably ought to have a post-large storm component to it, which I'm not sure if it's there, you know, where if you're going to look at some of the road system, even the majority of the road system, only every 3 years, you probably ought to look at it after a major storm event to see if things have fallen apart. And some of that can be done remotely as well. We are dealing in very sensitive terrain that are landslide prone. Most of you, I think, are from the Coast Range, and it's unstable enough, but the Klamath terrain, which comes almost right down to where I live at Turwer Creek, which major GDR ownership near the mouth of the Klamath, is even more landslide prone because deep soils were formed before the mountains were raised. So we have perched soils on steep slopes that are up to 137 feet thick. And when you put a road and log on that kind of terrain, you can have trouble if you don't do it right. I think, and my organization, and in general, the community feels, the conservation environmental community feels that it's one of the areas that we still have weakness is in protecting those landslide-prone slopes. I flew up on Saturday from the Bay Area back home, landed in Crescent City, and it was a beautiful day. And so I could, and the way the flight path went, I looked right over and saw the two huge landslides in Turwer Creek where I live. The company thinks they're unrelated to the road system. I'm not that sure, but I'm not allowed to go up there. So I don't know for sure. But in Wilson Creek, I saw four big active landslides. That goes right into, and I have actually filed some complaints on those creeks. The staff knows during big storm events, they get very muddy, particularly Wilson Creek goes right into the ocean, and you have muddy waves in False Klamath Cove there. So, you know, I think these are state, you know, they're the best we've done, but it remains to be seen, and it's too early to tell because, you know, you asked the question, what's the monitoring horizon, the proper monitoring horizon for sediment? It's a very good question, I think. And we need to look, you know, I think at least every 10 years and see, you know, what's the actual data telling us. So I look forward to being able to do that. I'm going to skip because I think, you know, what this presentation and your reaction to it actually begs is for this kind of WDR to be extended to other companies. And also for you to make recommendations to the Board of Forestry about the forest practice rules based on your experience with these WDRs, because they are more restrictive, and they're more restrictive in ways that better protects water quality. So I think you have evidence in that, and in the way the company has testified today in terms of the benefits, to actually be more proactive with the Board of Forestry in your conversations and making recommendations for, you know, some things. For example, inspect and fix. It ought to be part of the, you know, on an annual basis or large storm basis for road systems, ought to be part of the Board of Forestry rules. These things that work to protect water quality ought to be brought into the rules, and maybe someday the Board of Forestry rules could even be certified as best management practices. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else from the public to speak on this issue? Okay, hearing none, we're going to move, and I want to thank everyone for their presentation. Hearing none, we're going to move on to item 5.